Plus I can't turn the swell off. The franchise doing big business. I live this, it's automatic. I win this. So you hear those horns, you finish. A soldier, and I stay under you fighting. Plus I'm storming on you chumps like I'm thunder and lightning. Ain't no way you breaking me, kid. I'm harder than nails. Plus I keep it on lock like I'm part of the jail. I'm slaughtering stale competition. I got the whole block wishing they could run with my division, but they gone fishing with no bait. Kid, your boy hold weight. I got my soul straight. I brush your mouth like Colgate. In any weather, I'm never better. Your boy's so hot, you never catch me in the next man's sweater. If they hate, let them hate. I drop your whole clan. Lay your ass down for the 3 second tan.
Your time is up, my time is now. You can't see me, my time is now. It's the franchise where I'm shining now. You can't see me, yeah. My time is now.
It's gonna be what it's gonna be. 5 pounds of courage, buddy, base, 10 pants with a gold tee. It's a war dance, a victory step. A raw stance is a gift, and you insist it's my rep. John Cena trademark, y'all are so-so. And talk about the bread you make, but don't know the recipe for dough, though. Aiming guns in all your photos, that's a no-no. In this pop, your lip lock, your big talks are blatant no-so. See what happens when the ice age melts. It seems monetary status is not what matters, but it helps. I'm rocking timepiece by Benny, if any. The same reason y'all could love me is the same reason y'all condemn me. A man's measured by the way that he thinks. Not clothing lines, ice links, leather and minks. I spent 20 plus years seeking knowledge of self. So for now, Mark Brecht is living life for wealth.
Your time is up, my time is now. You can't see me, my time is now. It's the franchise where I'm shining.
What's up, K-Chicks listeners? It is Thursday, September 22nd, and you are listening once again to The Elephant in the Room. I am your host, Chris Roberts, once again coming at you live with another semester of quality news and radical tunes. Sorry if I was 4 minutes late coming in here. All the new technology is a little new. But anyway, if I'm not mistaken, though, this is my fourth semester doing this show, and I'm super excited to be back in the booth. It hadn't changed a bit besides the Mac. Anyway. Never would I have thought, though, I'd get, you know, last year I got like 25 podcast downloads a week, and like that, I mean, that was an achievement, man. I mean, I really felt like I couldn't believe someone was listening to me. It was great. But, a really big thanks to all the staff here at KHDX. You know, they did an excellent job in improving in all the equipment. The microphones are new, so hopefully I sound even more like Audible Chocolate. The website, you know, that website is beautiful. I mean, it was so much better than what we had. Not that what we did had was bad, but you know, that website is a gift, and I hope you guys are loving it as well. I hope if you're listening live, I hope the media player is working really, really well for you. So I may stop a few times in the show today to kind of clear my throat. I have felt the tickle in my throat. I thought I could get out of the first few weeks of school without getting sick, but it looks like I may or may not be coming down with something, but I'm glad to be here anyway. So I think I'm going to play one more song to get everything started off, then I'll come back. The first story of the day is there's a few updates coming out of Venezuela and the food crisis going on there. Once again, you know, the theme of this show isn't necessarily to just talk about Trump and Hillary all semester. That's just a little boring, you know. I want to definitely pull out some stories that you don't, you know, if you, you know, you click on CNN, all you hear about is the election. So let's talk about something else as much as we can. But anyway, I'm going to play a little bit of Queen. But if you haven't ever listened to the show, I play an array of music to break up the news stories, and we'll go with classic rock first. Why not? See y'all in a few.
I'm gonna have myself a real good time. I feel alive, and the world.
Through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity. I'm a racing car. supersonic man out of you. Stop me now.
I'm having such a good time. I'm having a ball.
Don't stop me now.
If you wanna have a good time, just give me a call.
Don't stop me now.
I'm having a good time.
Don't stop me
now. Yes, I'm having a good time. I
don't wanna stop at all.
And almost seamless fade out. Alrighty. So anyway, like before the break, I said that I was going to talk about the crisis coming out of Venezuela and, you know, just new numbers coming out of there. Pretty frightening stuff, but there's a few reasons for what's going on over there that we are going to discuss. Anyway, so it is being reported that as much as 15% of the Venezuelan population has resorted to, quote-unquote, eating garbage at times as their economic recession slumps even further. Research group More Consulting conducted the study and reports that there is a food and medicine shortage that forces most of the nation to wait in supermarket lines that can last up to 8 hours. On many occasions after the wait, they find that there is nothing left to buy, as expected. They go on to say that statistically, 72% of the population was able to get 3 meals a day, and 24% said they rarely eat protein and instead eat things like local dishes like yuca and malanga. I think that's how you say those. I really hope I didn't butcher those. Anyway, interestingly enough, a little over half the population buys food on the black market, but more on that later. So back in February, the Venezuelan National Assembly declared there was a nutritional emergency while doing very little to actually mitigate the problem. About half of markets, food, cargo trucks, and other sources have been a victim of violence for nutrition. All of these issues boil down to an inept government and president in Venezuela. In 2014, they implemented price control systems on basic goods, as well as a system of ration books, where the journal kept track of all food sales for rationing purposes. In essence, they could only buy what the books allowed, which began to inflate the currency more than its already 700% over the last 4 years due to a decrease in buying power relative to the world market. Maduro, the president, has had the government arrest people left and right for hoarding food and even standing outside the markets during unsanctioned hours. Since 2014, Maduro is using the military to run an organization known as CLAP, which is funny in and of itself, but which is known as a local committee for supply and production to control which neighborhoods receive food and when. At the end of the day, though, these problems come down to an inept, and the keyword being inept, socialist government, who thought it would be a good idea to put price ceilings on basic goods. If an apple's market price for the farmers of Venezuela was 75 cents, but the government comes in and then says it must be sold for 60 cents, well, then there's not much of a point to sell the apple, and there's no profit and no money to replant. Thus, we see the issues we have now. Everyone can afford food now, but there's no food to buy. The physical quantity of basic goods has decreased, and on top of all that, the currency has inflated, like I said before, over 700%, actually since 2014, which is making purchasing any outside food good near impossible. And of course, you know, now we see what happens when socialism, you know, can rear its very ugly head. However, there is no doubt that the lack of real leadership and forethought have hurt the country, not just socialism. And you really can't forget to mention that 96% of government revenue in Venezuela comes from their oil exports. It's pretty clear that the price of oil over the last few years has amplified the situation. But once again, terrible forethought. You know, if you have 96% of your revenue coming in that way and you're not making any money on what is clearly they have an agricultural system, it's just not taxed, they definitely need to diversify the way they achieve revenue, so this doesn't happen again. Now, there's no telling when or if the price of oil is ever coming back, in which case they better start soon. But it's a terrible situation, and we really shouldn't make necessarily light of it, but you can also learn a lot of lessons in our world, at least, or in anybody's world, or in any really developing country can really learn a lot of lessons from how to run their economy, especially relative to the world market. Anyway, we're going to step up the beats here a little bit, play a little bit of a little bit more bounce music. Anyway, when I come back, I'm going to, with our main story today, it's about the excess of cash hoards, offshore cash hoards by U.S. companies. That's reached an all-time high, and that's a pretty fun topic to talk about. So let's play some tunes, and I'll be back in a few. What's up, listeners? Once again, this is KHDX, or I'm going to say it, 93.1 FM, even though I'm not sure if that's necessarily working right now. But, and you're listening live, once again, to The Elephant in the Room. And right before the break, I said that I was going to talk about the cash hoards of U.S. companies offshore. And so, essentially, the story is, according to a recent story from Business Insider, American companies are now hoarding a record $2.5 trillion offshore. That number is roughly 14% of total U.S. GDP, according to Andrew Hunter at the economics research firm Capital Economics. Expectedly, Hunter blames the U.S. corporate tax rate of 35% as to why the money has stayed offshore, even though very few, if any, U.S. corporations pay a 35% tax rate. Business Insider takes note that companies like Apple have $91.5 billion invested overseas. However, companies like GE and Microsoft have over $100 billion overseas each. Of the $2.5 trillion, pharmaceutical companies make up 27% of the total cash hoard, whereas IT firms account for a whopping 40% of the money held overseas, which is up from 12% in 2002. Hunter continues his comments by saying that if this money was brought back to the U.S., it could quite possibly provide an economic boost, yet tax rates, according to him, have prevented that from happening. Then again, he also says that companies are generally unwilling to invest in long-term projects, and thus the repatriated cash probably wouldn't boost investment significantly. That is... He continues by saying, instead, evidence from a previous tax holiday in 2004 suggests that repaid earnings would probably be returned to shareholders, Hunter wrote. This would, however, provide an indirect boost to the economy. If shareholders then, if they did, use these funds to increase consumption and the government spend its extra tax revenue. I believe Hunter is right in the regard that businesses do not want to spend the cash on new long-term investments. However, there are a number of historical market factors that give us reason as to why that is. Now, I may get a little technical here, but I want y'all to bear with me because this is important. Now, U.S. companies already hold $1.9 trillion in cash reserves domestically. And that adds to the $2.5 trillion offshore, and that creates $4.4 trillion of reserves. This means that the companies are saving as opposed to borrowing and spending. Why? Well, a research group known as Williamson and Pinkowitz has been collecting data on how shareholders view such holdings between the years 1965 and 2014. Looking at 12,888 companies in 43 industry sectors, they have found two results. Cash holdings are generally associated with poor performance, and two, that investors value reserves in a sector-dependent way. Software companies are seen as likely to do better with a cash than can an investor acting alone. And reserves are valued at twice face. Pharmaceutical companies gain $1.50 for every dollar held. By contrast, defense companies are devalued by cash roughly at 40% of face value. And then the mining and quarrying reserves, which is the companies that actually go out and get the gold, they have a negative contribution to market value. So this would explain why some companies in certain sectors make up so much of the cash reserve balance, but the bigger issue is why the companies aren't investing the cash. I believe that boils down to a little ratio in finance, or economics, known as the Tobin Q. So the Tobin Q measures a company's preference to hold cash relative to their preference to hold intangible assets, like factories, meaning that a high Tobin Q would result in a lot of cash being held like right now. This Tobin Q measurement usually skyrockets in times of economic downturn and then stays that way even after the economy has superficially recovered, only slightly trickling down over time. This Tobin Q then is essentially a measure of market sentiment. It is essentially measuring the feeling of senior managers as to what the economy will do next, and right now they aren't very optimistic. So the why to that question is even tougher. I believe that the traditional functions of economics possibly are more than likely shifting and the market has changed. What I mean is technology has gotten a whole lot more complicated, but the way to harness it in a simple business model is not clear. Stake regulation has become, from the perspective of the company, onerous and arbitrary. You can argue that companies should pay out money as dividends, but very low interest rates mean that they do not have to generate a high yield. And in any way, shareholders, as indicated early, mostly want them to hang on to the cash anyway. The pendulum will, no doubt, swing once again. Someone, somewhere, will come up with a business model that answers to all these uncertainties. That will spread like fire, and the pent-up capital will probably fuel another bubble. But until then, we have to wait. There isn't much the state can do. We could tax reserves, but then money just runs elsewhere. We could do public infrastructure, but that is temporary and doesn't make private companies actually spend their cash. At this point, it is truly a waiting game, and it is, and this way you could go into a big, encouragement speech that it truly is on the shoulders of younger people who understand we have grown up with a completely different business model, and so in a completely different world, and it's not the same anymore. And so that at least it more than, I mean, not, I mean, this is my opinion, so, but in my opinion, that is what's more than likely propagating this high, what I, you know, that Tobin Q measurement that I was talking about. So I've gone on for a little while. That was a big piece of knowledge. Digest it. Let it, you know, seep into your bloodstream. I know, I hope you enjoyed it. It was, you know, but now you know that, you know, there's not, you know, it's not necessarily a cut and dry situation. Oh my gosh, they have all that money offshore. Now, a lot of that money, like I said earlier with Apple, is invested in, you know, their foreign labor markets and things like that. You know, not everything's made here, you know. I mean, it might change in a few months, but yeah, you never know. Anyway, we're going to go into the rap side of music with Lil 2 Chainz. Again, got to get people jumping up and down. It's almost weekend. What's up, K-Shakes listeners? Once again, this is the elephant in the room. And before the break, I said, well, I actually didn't say before the break what I was going to talk about because that was such a long piece, but I am going to talk about the Wells Fargo CEO, John Stumpf, and the current, shall we say, controversy surrounding his company. Before that, though, I just got the news alert. Rob Gronkowski is playing tonight. That's bad news for my hometown hero, Texans. I know I have a lot of people that are Texans fans listening, but hey, shut him down. That's all I have to say. Old broke hamstring. Anyway, so like I said, we're going to talk about the Wells Fargo CEO. And if you haven't heard, Wells Fargo has been in the news lately and for all the wrong reasons. Recently, it was uncovered that Wells Fargo Bank employees have been creating fake sham accounts, in order to meet what are considered aggressive sales goals. Employees would often open accounts for customers that they didn't need. However, customers still had to pay fees on these accounts. In some instances, they even removed money from a customer's checking account and put it into this bogus account without the customers even knowing. They simply thought banking fees were going up. This week, CEO of Wells Fargo, John Stumpf, faced scrutiny from federal investigators on Capitol Hill. Lawmakers really grilled him like a hamburger, and Senator Richard C. Shelby of Alabama said that, I have often said that banking is based on trust, and that trust was broken at Wells Fargo. Stumpf has been the CEO of Wells for over 30 years, and he was a very apologetic to customers. Nevertheless, lawmakers expressed their anger and disappointment liberally. Stumpf told the committee, "I am deeply sorry that we failed to fulfill our responsibility to customers, to our team members, and to the American public." He goes on to say, "I have been with Wells Fargo through many challenges, and none that pains me more than one that we'll discuss this morning." Earlier this month, the bank was fined $185 million for the practice, and 5,300 employees have been fired, including an area president. She was actually the vice president of banking. What has Capitol Hill angered is that these firings took place between 2011 and 2016, meaning that Wells Fargo knew about the practice, yet they didn't take more action to stop it. While Stumpf denied having any part in the scheme, Senator Elizabeth Warren tore into the embattled CEO, demanding to know why none of his $19 million compensation was given up in the wake of the scandal. She noted how Stumpf consistently touted Wells as superior sales numbers, and in turn, investors continued to pour into the stock. Stumpf himself has in turn earned $200 million in capital gains over the last several years. Warren, in a particularly fiery exchange, said, "Evidently, your definition of accountable is to push the responsibility to low-level, low-wage workers. It is gutless leadership. You should resign. You should give back the money," she says. In a letter to Wells Fargo customers, Hillary Clinton wrote, "There is simply no place for this kind of outrageous behavior in America. Our economy depends on a strong and safe banking system to help keep it moving. But even after the Americans spent years working hard to recover from the Great Recession, the culture of misconduct and recklessness that preceded that crisis too often persists." In an effort to defend himself, Stumpf said that he had learned of the wrongdoings in 2013, but recognized that he didn't do enough. He said, "I want to apologize for violating the trust of our customers, the trust our customers have invested in Wells Fargo." He continues, "And I want to apologize for not doing more sooner to address the causes of this unacceptable activity." Now, what do I believe in all of this, since that's the theme of the show? Well, there's no denying what happened at Wells Fargo was wrong. Since the financial crisis, though, banks are supposed to be some of the most regulated institutions in America, yet they get away with this. Let's also not forget that Wells Fargo gives quite a few dinero dollars to our leaders in Washington, and that this little hearing was probably nothing more than a circus parade. I don't expect Stumpf to resign. Yet. The feds can fine and reap Wells Fargo. Reap Wells Fargo. God, that's a tongue twister. All they want, but what matters to them is the stock price and the customer base. Both of those are sure to continue to sink, and when the board of the company has had enough, they will fire Stumpf in order to rally the stock back. For the most part, the Dow Jones Industrial today, if you look at the heat map, which is the green and the red squares, everybody was up except for about a dozen companies, and Wells Fargo was one of those that was down. Look at the rest of the sector, and even the financials were up. But, you know, I have no doubt Wells Fargo is in hot water, but word fights in Washington won't change anything, but investors, we can, you know? I mean, the customer base is leaving the company. There are better banks out there, you know? I mean, the Better Bank of America, and think companies like that, you know, big financial institutions that are more than happy to at least say they're not doing the exact same thing. So, take that how you will. If you're with Wells Fargo, I hope you don't have 12 random accounts for 12 different things. But if you do, there'll probably be a class action coming around soon, so there might be some cash in there for you. But anyway, I'm gonna turn it down a little bit, play a little bit of stuff that was on the KHDX playlist from last semester, and I will be back in a few with a little bit of funny news. I know I have this new section. I'm gonna call it funny news. I can be more creative. I need to get on that.
Guess it's true, I'm not good at understand. But I still need love, cause I'm just a man. These nights never seem to go to plan. I don't want you to leave, will you hold my hand? Oh, won't you stay with me? Cause you're all. This ain't love, it's clear can lay with me so it doesn't hurt. Oh, won't you stay with me? 'Cause you're all I need. This ain't love, it's clear to see. But darling, stay.
What's up, KCHX listeners? We got the last section of the elephant in the room here. I kind of scorched through the show a little bit, but I wanted to allow a lot of time at the end for me to like export this audio file. We got a brand new podcasting system, Megan. It's way better. I hope they come out like in sound wise at least a lot better. Like I can hear, see my voice to make the little, you know, decibel ripples. Anyway. So, funny news. So like many of my shows, they can be a little dense, and for some listeners, I'm starting a little new tradition of doing, you know, like, you know, a story that kind of makes you giggle. So for this week's little funny part of the news, apparently a steakhouse known as Epic Steak in San Francisco, which, by the way, speaking of San Francisco, did you hear about that? There's a giant high-rise condominium building that is tipping over. It's sinking, and then it's leaning over. And then I thought about that, and I was like, well, you know, the city I'm from, Houston, the whole city's sinking. And I was like, how many of the buildings are tipped over? But anyway, like I said, so San Francisco, this steakhouse known as Epic Steak has a $43 martini. Yep, that's right, $43. And why do you ask? Why, you ask? Well, it's made with a special vodka called Fog Point Vodka. And no, it isn't distilled with children's tears. This vodka is actually made with water harvested from San Francisco's famous fog. Yep, fog. Even though fog is plentiful, it takes days just to get a cup of water with one collection of ice. Per season, the fog catchers only rake in 600 liters of fog water, making this stuff a hot commodity. The beverage master, well, this place is a beverage master, you know, not head bartender. The beverage master at Epic Steak, surprisingly says he sells one or two of these cocktails a week. I'm wondering what he buys the bottle for, really, because if you go to the company's website, it's not for sale anymore. They have it there, but, you know, it's not necessarily for sale anymore, which I was sad about. I was hoping it'd be like, you know, $600 a bottle of vodka. It would probably be more than that, but anyway, like I said, that was the last topic for the show. I'm going to try to close out this podcast here. I'll play one more song, and I want to thank everybody for listening to the show. I'll be back on every Thursday from 4 to 5, hopefully every single Thursday. And once again, this has been The Elephant in the Room on KHDX 93.1, and I'll see y'all next week.
Wait a second, let me catch my breath. Remind me how it feels to hear your voice. Your lips are moving, I can hear a thing. Living life as if we had a choice. Anywhere, anytime, I would do anything for you. Anything for you. Yesterday got away, melody stuck inside your head. save me, save. And she saved me, save. God, save me, save. I show.